When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey guys, hey 99ers, are you guys willing to change your fan base name? Because we have a new podcast on Patreon, podcast like it's 1989, and we're looking to turn some of you 99ers into 89ers.
That's the hope, that you're interested in hearing us talk about some of the best films of 1989, from Batman to When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, Field of Dreams, Major League, with great guests like Tom Meissen and Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Chuck Hayward, Brian Cogman. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For $5, you'll get access to audio for all of these fantastic episodes, and for a few bucks more, you get video of our 99 episodes as well as our 89 episodes. Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I'm your host, Phil Iscove. And with me today, I'm pleased to say, is Liz Tuchillo, writer-producer from Sex and the City. She was on Smash, Sweet Bitter, Divorce, and author of He's Just Not That Into You. Thank you so much for being here, Liz.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
So I want to sort of rewind a little bit. I don't know that the show came into your life specifically in 1999, but how did the show come into your life? And do you remember watching Sex and the City in 99?
No, I definitely was not watching it when it first came, the first season or the first two seasons. Because at the time I was a playwright in New York and I was really not interested in, I wasn't sort of one of those writers that wanted to write for women. I was sort of like kind of almost wanted to make a point of not writing for women and just sort of not being my thing.
Sure.
For some strange reason. And then I watched an episode of where they all go to a baby shower. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic. And then I started watching and I was just so impressed with the writing. I just loved it so much.
So did you, I think that, one of the things that's become, a hallmark of this miniseries and certainly, a hallmark of the show, but just sort of how groundbreaking it was for the time. It obviously now some of it feels a little bit quaint, but at the time it really did feel like this groundbreaking show in terms of having these independently minded women, that were breaking preconceived notions of what female characters in a romantic comedy setting could do. Is that what drew you to it? Do you feel as though it had an effect on your writing?
I just thought that the writing was just very funny and very sharp and wasn't the cliche of what women, you know, at that time, women were being written and how they spoke. So I thought it was more just the basic, like just the excellence in how the dialogue was written was what really brought me to it. I mean,
sure.
Then when I got on the show, I was just sort of, it was very funny and fun to be involved in just how dirty, I mean, it really was, it was like, that really did strike me when I started working on the show. Like, this is really very dirty.
So could you give us a sense of what it was like in the room when it came to sort of breaking story and coming up with ideas and stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, it was the best job in the world because we were, many of us were women who were single, and we would sort of start the day talking about what we did the night before. And it was perfectly appropriate to do so because we would be talking about who we saw, who we went on a date with, and our love lives. And usually, you know, you're not allowed to do that in a job, but this was the job where you got paid to talk about your love lives and what you did the night before. And it would just turn into stories often, where Michael Patrick King would just start seeing where the sort of hot, the heat was coming from when we'd start talking about these kinds of things.
Sure.
And, yeah, so a lot of it had to do with us just coming from a very personal place. Sometimes there was lots of tears, sometimes there was lots of laughs, but it's always very personal. It's felt that's where it started.
It's interesting that you say that because, you know, some of my favorite shows, it feels like those writers' rooms tended to be a little bit more therapy sessions, I guess, is one way of putting it. You know, when the writers are all very open about their own lives and really kind of everybody is cathartically working through stuff, it just feels, I don't know. I know it's unorthodox, but at the same time, it feels like a healthy way of dealing with that stuff.
Well, it's strange because it was my first job. So that's right. All I knew. And I was obviously to be expected. So then ever since then, you know, going on to a new show, everybody's sort of now, it's gotten very polite. And everybody's like, well, I don't want to talk about, you know, my personal life, but however, and then everyone's sort of ashamed to sort of say anything about what's going on in their lives because it's just not, that's not the what's right. needed or what's expected. And I'm always like, honey, do you know what we were talking about in, you know, back in the day? Like, yeah, it's okay for you to talk about, you know, your kid acting up at dinner time. Like, it's really, it's okay.
So, you know, in 1999, the show is, it's in its second season. The Sopranos is about to premiere its first season or has premiered its first season earlier in 99. And obviously, you know, Sopranos and Sex and the City are still, you know, perhaps the brightest and biggest jewels in the crown at HBO. You know, they broke so much new ground. They changed the way that people watch television, the type of characters that have been quote unquote allowed to be on television. When you were on the show, which I know is a little bit later in the run, but did you feel that? Did you feel like that you guys were at the tip of the spear when it came to sort of, you know, a romantic comedy, you know, that featured primarily women?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I got on, it was like sort of being a rookie that gets traded to the Yankees or whatever. I don't even know the expression.
Right. Yeah, sure.
I mean, I walked, my first day of work was the day after they had won all these Emmys or one Emmy. So it was completely incredibly intimidating and fantastic and horrifying at the same time. So they were, when I came into, you know, they were at the top of the game already.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which I imagine has to be pretty, as you said, intimidating. But at the same time, I mean, I can't even imagine what kind of a learning experience that must have been.
Well, it's a really good, I would hope every writer has an opportunity to work on a show that's incredibly well received and also well run, because you can believe that both are possible at the same time. And you also see what the qualities are that make a success like that. And you sort of will always keep that with you.
For sure. When you were on the show, were there certain storylines or certain characters that you found yourself gravitating towards?
I mean, one of the sort of big things is that I was hired right after 9/11. So right. It was the season after 9/11, and there's a lot of big conversations about what do you do with New York after 9/11, and what do you talk about? What do you don't talk about? So for me, I was just gravitated towards all the stuff about New York City and the love you have for New York City and what it's like to be single in sort of this time in New York City. So the first episode of the season I worked on, season five, was, you know, where she has a date with New York. And that was very sort of meaningful to me. And then her her going to a party where you dance with sailors was something that could actually come from an experience that I had every Memorial Day weekend. There was a Fleet Week that came to New York. So I was able to share that with everybody. But it was sort of like the New York centric stories that really kind of spoke to me at that time.
Sure. Did you, did you find that you had to, Carrie is a different character, for lack of a better way of putting it, with the different guys that she's dating. And did you find that there were certain relationships? I mean, I know that you know, you wrote the episode with the Post-it note, the infamous Post-it note. Did you feel as though, like, writing Carrie with Berger versus writing Carrie with Petrosky or something along those lines, did you feel, you know, as though you enjoyed writing her one way or another, or were there different ways of sort of tapping into the character?
Oh, that's interesting. No, I don't think there was, I don't think anyone sort of saw her differently as a different character through, right. And I know that's not what you're actually saying, but through the different men she dated, but there was definitely almost like a different rhythm that she had with the different men. And that I remember there was a lot of conversation with Berger that they wanted to be very rat-tat-tatty and sort of a really good banter between them. And then, obviously, with Petrovsky, there was a sort of a much more where he was a much more overwhelming figure to her.
Sure.
So yeah, but not necessarily there was any specific preference or anything.
So I have to ask: did you know someone who broke up with someone with a Post-it note? Is that a thing?
Oh my gosh. You know what? I know that there's other women on the writer's staff who will remember this. Basically, I remember the conversation where we all talked about the worst ways we've been broken up with.
Right.
And then we came to being broken up with on a Post-it, but I don't know if it was anyone's specific experience of getting broken up with a Post-it. I did not get broken up with on a Post-it. Okay. My episode is actually the one where she reacts to being broken up.
Correct. It's the fallout of the Post-it.
And I have, and that's, you know, yes. Yeah, so I got to deal more with the anger of broken up in that horrible way.
I have to say though, you know, today I imagine that people are dumped via text like daily. I'm sure that happens.
Every minute, every second of the day. Yeah.
Every second of the day.
Yeah. That's what you're talking about being quaint. Like, oh, you had somebody respected you enough to actually handwrite you. Like, God bless.
I know, right? Wow. It's amazing. So I do feel like the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, it starts pretty, I don't want to say light and breezy, but it's certainly a lot lighter, and it gets into darker or certain deeper, darker might not be the right word, but it digs deeper as the show progresses. And it's one of the things that I love about the show is that it doesn't shy away from putting these characters into challenging situations for themselves emotionally and physically and professionally. Did you feel like that there was sort of a balancing act in terms of finding the humor and the depth that the show, you know, how did you sort of approach that, I guess?
I don't think it was about any specific conversation, but I remember Michael being very clear about how you kept a show sort of staying in the same world and the same tone. Like, no matter how far you go into the seriousness, there's a way to always come back with the joke or come back with the sort of like the cream pie, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, is that no matter how, you can go pretty far out there, but you just know that there's ways to sort of signal to the audience, no, we're still in the show. She's still going to go and,
right,
you know, get hit by balloons in her head as she's walking out the restaurant, you know, like, there's ways to figure out. That's actually a specific thing. I remember that there was a big fight, and then Charlotte walks out and fights through all these balloons. I think it was Charlotte. Anyway.
That feels right. Okay. I don't know about you, but at least for myself, when I go into a writer's room or go to work on a show, at least in the beginning, I try to find inspiration in things, if it's other books, if it's or movies or television shows, whatever the case might be. Were you inspired by anything when it came to writing on this show?
You know, because I'd come in late and I just watched all the episodes.
Sure, sure.
You know, I just devoured them all, and I became sort of, I was like brainwashed by the time I walked in. I was like, I want to wear fancy shoes. And wear. I mean, I was completely, I completely had been indoctrinated. So that's mainly what it was. I was just had to be really, really up to date with all the episodes and what was going on.
Sure.
The inspiration.
So here, I'm very curious as to your thoughts on the movies. Have you watched the movies? Do you have thoughts on the movies?
Yeah, I mean, of course I've watched the movies, and my thoughts on them is that I love the ladies and I love the movies and I love everything about everything. So it's hard for me to sort of have any kind of like very opinionated critical
sure.
about things. I know that it's difficult. I think that the only thing I guess maybe I would say is that it would have been great if at the time there was streaming video, there was more streaming services. Like the idea to be able to come back and do more TV, I think it's going to be great to serve the women to be served on a small screen again. I think there's something about perhaps people were, I know people had some complaints, and I think maybe the feeling of them being on this big screen and having to tell these sort of big stories maybe didn't serve the stories the way people wanted it to. I didn't feel that way, but I think it's a great idea to have them come back on TV. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into the tall grass on the movies with you, but I'll just say that similarly to you, I'm not sure that the format benefited them that much. I think that it's, you know, what I loved about this show was the 22, 25, 28 minute chunks of these people's lives. And the intimacy that comes with a television show that I think is lost when you put it on a big screen. So I'm excited as well for the revival to see how they explore these characters' lives from this vantage point. You know, they're older and the world's a different place. So I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah. I am too. I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be fantastic.
So, just to wrap up, one last question: did you? I don't want to say, do you have a favorite character, but do you have a character that stayed with you in a way that maybe the other ones didn't, or that you locked into in a way that maybe the others didn't? I know
no,
it's a tough question. It's like no, asking.
Not as characters. I actually have very, like, fond feelings for all the actresses. And so I will ponder sort of women's work, like,
sure.
You know, and how sort of like watching Kim Cattrall do her work and watching Cynthia Nixon do her, like, and Kirsten Davis, and of course, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker, but like just missing getting to see them do their work and be so sort of enmeshed with their characters was really something I kind of think about at times, but nothing in about the characters themselves.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, this will be the, I don't know, 17th or 18th episode that I've done so far. And it is interesting to see how people, some people separate the actor from the character, and some people are just so in love and enamored with the characters themselves that it's like they're the actor just doesn't even exist to some degree or another. So having worked on shows myself, I know that there really is kind of a pretty thick line between the character and the actor, you know, yes. That they really are two very different entities. So,
yes. And I just loved watching them perform. I mean, I just remember, that's like, I remember just sure. really missing that of just getting to be like, sort of like, front row seats to their performances was really nice.
Well, and it's interesting too, you mentioned, you know, sort of the theater and what have you. There is such a theatrical component to this show that is so lovely. That sort of high wire act of the characters being broad and funny, but grounded and believable. And it's a testament to the four leads that the show continues to be as beloved as it is, because I think that what they're doing is just truly unbelievable every week.
Yeah. And it's really funny to think, I mean, you just, who would have thought it would still be something people were talking about? I mean, I knew it would last for a long time, but not this long.
Yeah, it's also, you know, there's some stuff obviously that doesn't date very well, and yet it's again a testament to people's love of the show that they're able to sort of be like, listen, it was a different time, and you know, I still want to be able to love the 95% of the show that still works. So it's really special. So and speaking of special, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Truly,
no, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Liz. One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Also, please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits. Thank you to Ernie and Will for producing our episode, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our artwork and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening. It's 1999. Podcast like it. You want a podcast like it. 1999.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.